That was a spot, Lee called. As in, spot weld. I moved the pry bar and found a similar position 12 inches to the left. Wedged the bar tight, took up the slack, and bounced. Same three results. The grind of powdered concrete, the screech of bending bars, and the ping of another metal bead torn loose. Two rooms away, a second phone started to ring. A different tone. More urgent. I stood back and caught my breath. Moved the pry bar again, this time 2 feet to the right. Repeated the procedure and was rewarded with another broken weld. Three down, many more to go. But now I had approximate handholds in the bottom rail where the pry bar had forced shallow U-shaped bends into the metal. I put the pry bar down and squatted, facing the cell, and shoved my hands, palms up into the holes, grasped hard and breathed hard and prepared to lift. When I quit watching the Olympics, the weightlifters were moving more than 500 pounds. I figured I was capable of much less than that. But I figured much less than that might do the trick. Two rooms away, the second telephone stopped ringing, and a third started. I heaved upward. I got the side of the cell about a foot off the ground. The tread plate floor shrieked and bent like paper, but the welds held. The third telephone stopped ringing. I looked up at Lee and mouthed, "Jump." She got the message. She was a smart woman. She jumped high off the toilet and smashed her bare feet down together right where two welds were under pressure. I felt nothing through my hands, no impact, no shock, because the welds broke immediately and the floor bent down into a radical V-shaped chute like a mouth. The opening was about a foot wide and a foot deep. Good, but not good enough. A kid might have gotten through it, but Lee wasn't going to. But at least we had proved the principle, score one, for the 19th century city fathers. Two rooms away, all three phones started to ring simultaneously, competing tones, fast and urgent. I caught my breath again, and after that it was just a question of repeating the triple procedures over and over again, two welds at a time, the pry bar, the weightlifting, the jump. Lee wasn't a big woman, but even so, we needed to tear free a line of welds nearly 6 feet long before the floor would bend down enough to let her out. It was a question of simple arithmetic. The straight edge of the floor became part of a curved circumference in a ratio of 1 to 3 against us. It took us a long time to get the job done, close to 8 minutes, but we got it done eventually. Lee came out on her back, feet first, like a limbo dancer. Her shirt got caught and rode up to reveal a smooth, tan stomach. Then she wriggled free and crabbed clear and stood up and hugged me hard and longer than she needed to. Then she broke away, and I rested for a minute and wiped my hands on my pants. Then I repeated the whole procedure all over again for Jacob Mark. Two rooms away, phones rang and stopped, rang and stopped. Chapter 47. We got out fast. Theresa Lee took the lead agent's shoes. They were big on her, but not by much. Jacob Mark took the medical technician's whole outfit. He figured that an incomplete, out-of-town cop's uniform would be conspicuous on the street, and he was probably right. The change was worth the delay. He looked much better in the chinos and the T-shirt and the basketball sneakers. They fit close to perfectly. There was a nickel-sized blood stain on the back of the pants, but that was the only disadvantage. We left the medical guy sleeping in his underwear. Then we headed out, up the stairs, across the littered floor, through the alley to the 3rd Street sidewalk. It was crowded. It was still hot. We turned left. No real reason, just a random choice, but a lucky one. We got about 5 steps away, and I heard the blare of a horn behind us, and the yelp of tires, and I glanced back and saw a black car jamming to a stop 10 feet the other side of the firehouse. A Crown Vic, new and shiny. 2 guys spilled out. I had seen them before, and I knew for sure that Theresa Lee had seen them before. Blue suits, blue ties. The FBI. They had talked to Lee in the precinct house, and they had talked to me on 35th Street. They had asked me questions about Canadian phone numbers. Now, 20 feet behind us, they ran for the alley and ducked in. They didn't see us at all. But if we had turned right, we would have collided head-on with them as they got out of their car. So we had been lucky. We celebrated by hustling hard, straight for 6th Avenue. Jacob Mark got there first. He was the only one of us with decent shoes. We crossed 6th Avenue and followed Bleecker for a spell, and then found refuge on Cornelius Street, which was narrow and dark and relatively quiet, except for diners at sidewalk cafe tables. We stayed well away from them, and they paid no attention to us. They were more interested in their food. I didn't blame them. It smelled good. I was still very hungry, even after the salami and cheese. We headed up to the quiet end of the street and took inventory there. Lee and Jake had nothing. All their stuff was locked away in the firehouse basement. I had what I had reclaimed from the table in the second room, the important components of which were my cash, my ATM card, my Metro card, and Leonid's cell phone. The cash amounted to $43 and change. The Metro card had 4 rides left on it. Leonid's cell was almost out of battery. We agreed it was beyond certain that my ATM number and Leonid's phone number were already flagged up in various computer systems. If we used either one, someone would know within seconds. But I wasn't too worried. Information has to be useful to be damaging. If we escaped from West 3rd and days later withdrew cash in Oklahoma City or New Orleans or San Francisco, then that data would be significant. If we withdrew cash immediately, a couple of blocks from the firehouse, then that data was useless. It told them nothing they didn't already know. And there are so many cell antennas in New York that triangulation is difficult. A ballpark location is helpful out in the sticks, not so much in the city. A target area 2 blocks wide and 2 deep can contain 50,000 people and take days to search. So we moved on and found an ATM in a bright blue bank lobby, and I withdrew all the cash I could, which was $300. Apparently, I had a daily limit. And the machine was slow, probably on purpose. Banks cooperate with law enforcement. They sound the alarm and then slow down the transaction. The idea is to give the cops time to show up. Maybe possible in some places, not very likely with city traffic to deal with. The machine waited and waited and waited, and then it coughed up the bills. I took them and smiled at the machine. Most of them have surveillance cameras built in, connected to digital recorders.